Hello and welcome to Beneath the Calm. Thank you for joining us today. And the space was created for all of us to gather to share story and insights about life matters. My name is Jacinta Yang. I'm the host of also podcast Self-Aware Soul. And my YouTube channel, Jacinta Healing Arts, where I share content for personal and spiritual growth. I offer healing journey services where I help my clients with tools and insight to navigate through life. Life itself, I think, is a school. There are so many people in the world that everyone has a different life struggle, challenges that we go through, and it is very, very difficult for us to really understand everything and everyone. And I think life is a continuous learning. And even though I've worked with clients and helped them through many challenges, I still find I'm learning everything new. And it's just mind-boggling to know that there's so much that we can learn from life. Every day we learn something new. And today I've invited Anshar Seraphim, our very special guest. And when I met him, I knew there was so much he has to offer that I could learn from. And I would like to introduce you to him to share his story. When I met Anshar, he told me that he was not verbal for 25 years. But when I just hear him communicate, it is so hard to believe that someone who did not communicate for so many years of his life is communicating so well. So I'd like to introduce you to Anshar. Anshar, please, I'd like to thank you for joining us today and being open to share your story. So could you please tell us about yourself? I'm going to leave it to you to share the challenges that you went through so that people can learn where they're at the journey, and perhaps your story can help many of those people that may have a similar struggle. Anshar?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. So I was actually 75% or so nonverbal with autism until age 11. 25 years old was actually when I got my first friend. I used to watch social relationships from the outside, like an observer. I never thought that they would happen to me. That was my whole childhood. A lot of difficulty interacting with the other kids. I didn't have any siblings. My mother and my grandmother raised me. They were music teachers, so we had like 40 families a week in the house. Lots of people murdering songs on the violin. But I never really had the ability to relate to anyone. I always felt like I was from a different planet. I remember when I was 8 years old or so, I got into trouble because I was running around the school after the other kids trying to kiss them. I didn't understand human relationships. It was really confusing to me. And there are a lot of challenges with autism, and there's a big spectrum, right? So it's there's all kinds of different ways that it can manifest in different people's lives. It's a developmental disability, and for some people, who have higher support needs, I consider myself lucky. There are physical disadvantages that can go along with the condition, and just because things are shared on certain genes. Like when I was born, I had one of my eyes turned all the way into my nose, like a really severe strabismus that I had to have corrected with surgery. I have differences in my facial structure with the bones that are underneath, some other medical conditions that kind of go on the same genes. So those were their own challenges. But my biggest challenge was connecting to other people. As I got older, I started to realize just how different I was from everyone. And in psychology, there's this interesting thing called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, this idea that the way that we acquire language changes the way that we think and process the world or even experience time. And for me, developing a relationship with the written word first, lexical first, and having aphantasia, meaning I don't have like a mental blackboard in my mind, I found myself processing my world in symbols and text. When I started to get better at speaking, it was because I was able to recognize two things. One of them was that my own voice was giving me sensory issues. My natural speaking voice is like an octave and a half lower than this. I had to learn how to speak in a different octave. And then on top of that, because that was sensory processing issues, I have synesthesia. So when I hear certain ranges and frequencies of sound, I feel it all over my entire body. My skin, it was one of the reasons I didn't get my driver's license until I was 37 years old. As I got older, I came from that generation before we were passing out a diagnosis to kids. They weren't even diagnosing kids with ADHD when I was in school. They only came out with Asperger's, which is, kind of a legacy term now because they've changed that and incorporated it into the spectrum and the DSM. But they only came out with that 2 years before I graduated high school. So by contrast, because I got my diagnosis at 19 years old when I tried to join the military. Your average kid today gets diagnosed around 4 years old. So, there's a lot of different ways that autism can touch people's lives. And for me, as like a cognitive savant, I have to always kind of stand in awe. As many challenges as I've had, other people have way more challenges than me. And because my cognitive skills can sometimes attract attention. It's important to me to kind of toss out that whole autism as a superpower idea. There are those of us who can really excel at certain things because of the way that we process information, but really autism is about having challenges and learning how to overcome those challenges and learning how to accept and live with others. I think one of the things that depressed me most after my diagnosis was the realization that many of my symptoms would be seen as character traits by other people. That just like a person with ADHD, might be unfairly called lazy or disorganized or impulsive. I have my own challenges with autism, and people would think that I didn't care, because I couldn't show empathy. On my face, or that I was being dishonest with them because I couldn't give them eye contact. And the list just goes on and on. There's a lot of things that I can't do, and I think one of the things that surprises most people when they meet me is that I'm still mostly nonverbal in person. I can't handle all the sensory input and communicate. So the internet has provided kind of an interesting scaffold for me. To be able to interact with people because I can, I mean, I've got a volume control for the world. It's right here on my headset. If the light's too bright, I can turn it down. I can create a system of expected sensory experiences so that I have the ability to cope. But it's taken a whole lot of work, and I still have a lot of work to do. Just like every other person, I have a lot of work to do on myself. So I think that it's been a humbling experience, but seeing the way that other people react, it's taught me a lot of really important lessons about mistakes that we all make, when we're dealing with challenges or when we're interacting with other people. So I hope that I have some insight that I can share.
I know we human has a tendency to make assumptions. Okay, I don't know too much about autism. I guess you can say I have some friends, a friend that has a son who's autistic, but I've not actually met him in person. And another friend whose son is autistic as well, but I don't. I don't see that, you know, how it's portrayed on TV. You know, some when you see a TV show, how they portray some people with autistic condition. And can you say, is that a correct projection of what autistic, I guess when somebody who has autism, is that a correct projection that is shown on TV?
Well, I mean, as recently as the 80s, a lot of people, unless they had it directly affect their lives or touch a relative or something like that, there would be like common references to like Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman. And then as things move forward and people start to learn more about autism, certain autistic traits that people would notice would start getting written into characters. But it would often tokenize the people that they're trying to point it at. An example might be Sheldon Cooper on The Big Bang Theory. Now that would be an example of someone with lower support needs, and they're kind of playing up that person's quirks because it's a comedy show. There is a vector of how do we make things entertaining. And I get that, but when most of the public doesn't inform themselves on disabilities, there's always going to be a really big difference between the reality, for people who actually have a disability and what things look like on TV, whether you've got, dwarfism or you're in a wheelchair or you're, struggling with diabetes or whatever. Those things aren't really properly going to be represented unless it's like a medical program, and maybe they're trying to have some interesting medical cases. When you move into more modern entertainment, you see series like The Good Doctor, or there's one on Netflix, I think, with a guy who has a special interest in penguins. Those can be representative of certain people on the spectrum, but you also have to consider that you're picking one color out of an entire rainbow. That there are people out there that have really, really significant challenges, and those aren't going to be properly represented because it's not entertaining. It's just as not entertaining to watch a person have to deal with, sores on a prosthetic leg, or, what it's like to have your wheelchair break down in a public place when you don't have have a friend around. Those kinds of situations that people who actually have disabilities have to deal with on a regular basis, they're not things that people like to think about. So you're not going to get to see that peek behind the curtain. So I think that's one of the things that you're going to see in difference. Maybe after we do our commercial break or whatever, we can go further into that, or I could talk a little bit more about what I've chosen to do with my career.
Okay. So, actually, what I'd like to ask you, are we time for a break now? Okay, so we'll go on a break and then we'll come back and ask you some more questions.
Sure, of course.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Beneath the Calm. Thank you for joining us. And I'm so grateful to Anshar Serafim for joining us today to share his story on autism, from nonverbal communication to fully communicating. I think I would never have guessed that Anshar never communicated for 25 years, just from our first meeting. He's so articulate in the topic that he's talk about. And Anshar, you mentioned that you were diagnosed with autism at age 19, is that correct? I don't have a lot of understanding about autism, which is why I was happy to ask you to join so that I can learn a little bit more, and also our audience can learn more about autism. And from what I understand, when you have autism, you are hypersensitive, like your senses are hyper, is that correct?
There is it's kind of like a volume control on your senses, and I would say that the volume is just set abnormally high with autism, so much so that your sensitivity to different things, depending on what you're sensitive to, can be overwhelming. They can cause dysregulation, emotional dysregulation. A lot of people with autism have meltdowns. I know I have. There's those challenges. It's kind of like everything in your brain being connected involuntarily. So there's a lot of things that go on with the brain that are automatically related to one another, whether or not you want them to be. And that can cause strange association of topics, interesting differences in thinking. But also the overwhelming nature of the world around you tends to make you go inward. And that is one of those things that it's that inward focus that gives autism its name, auto from the self. So trying to go to a restaurant and having to listen to all 13 conversations that are going on in the room at the same time, because your brain can't filter them. So it just sounds like a bunch of noise. Feeling overwhelmed from anything from the texture of a fabric to the food that you're trying to eat, it can be really challenging. And those challenges vary for people that are on the spectrum.
So is it common across the board for people with autism to have that hypersensitivity?
I would say that an increased sensitivity to things is one of the few things that you can count on when someone's on the spectrum. Because it can look so different for so many different people. You have some comorbidities too, because anywhere from 40 to 60% of people with autism also have ADHD. There's some dopaminergic involvement there. And, whether or not the symptoms of that problem end up taking the limelight away from some of the other challenges or vice versa, it really depends on the individual person to help decide what it looks like. People can be sensory avoidant, like I am, or they can be sensory seeking. That intense desire for novelty and new stimulation from the ADHD brain can end up leading people, from one thing to another, and almost giving them a kind of intense focused extroversion, but only with that thing that's currently catching their focus. So it's gonna look so different, and I think one of the reasons that they unified things the way that they did on the spectrum is to be able to give people more support and medical recognition. But I would argue that the condition itself probably needs to be subdivided into some smaller categories so that we have a little bit more focus for treatment. And I think one issue is because there is a social component, where your symptoms are being seen as character traits, there is a desire for people on the spectrum to be able to kind of unify together and to have a social identity. And that can sometimes be at ends with the kind of segregation that might need to happen to be able to address individual issues, because so many people found out from being diagnosed, you know, hey, all the stuff that I'm going through is actually very normal for this condition, and it's very validating. And separating medical diagnostics from social validation, you know, that's something that has to happen as a cultural process, because understanding that as a part of your identity is a process.
So you mentioned that you found comfort in being able to come online. That's your way you can actually manage the volume. For me, I'm an empath, and I can feel and sense people's energies, pain, emotions, just as if it was my own. And like you, I also find it overwhelming to be in a crowd with people, even though I may not be hypersensitive to touch, but I'm still sensitive to the energy around me, right? But yet at the same time, I can still feel things through the online. I can still feel the energy, but you find that that's you are able to protect. I mean, I found my coping skills to protect myself from absorbing the energy. The other thing that I wanted to ask, I mean, this is something that I guess can set us apart from other people that are not super sensitive to energy. And of course, there are times growing up, people call you crazy or something is wrong with you, right? Before understanding that, it's like, it used to feel hurtful, but having a better understanding of who I am and what I feel, what I sense, and having accepted that, right? I'm able to say, okay, tell me something I don't know when somebody called me crazy. So in your journey, like when you felt that you were different from your peers in school, what were your struggles?
I mean, the social issues with autism are so strong, for me at least, that I would have difficulty speaking up even if someone was standing on my foot. You know, the chasm between me and other people was just too far to cross. And when I finally did get my diagnosis, when I went into the military, because, you know, wanted to try to get some autonomy and some direction for myself, and ended up having some of the same social problems I had earlier, but this time I had all that access to medical care and all of that. So when I got that diagnosis, my first reaction was not empowering at all. I felt like the things that I was working on and trying to move away from, it made me feel like those were challenges that I was going to be stuck with for my whole life. And part of having a disability, whether you lose a hand in an accident or you're born with a, you know, a difference, is starting to learn acceptance about that. You know, I have to accept that there are times that being in a friendship or a relationship with me is going to take more energy from someone. And I have to choose people who understand that that's not my fault and don't point that frustration that's very valid for them to feel at me. Because our natural tendency when people frustrate us is to direct that energy at them for being the source. But if it's beyond someone's control, you know, it's still a valid emotion, but it has to be processed differently. And not everyone's emotionally mature enough to do that, which means that that greatly narrows my ability to have friendships. You know, I have to choose a subset of people that are able to handle that. There's a lot of challenges. And for me, you know, by the time that I was in my early 20s, I'd had like 50 or so different autistic special interests, you know, where I would just learn everything about something and dive into it and disappear. And one day I read the Dragons of Eden by Carl Sagan. And in that book, he talks about the evolutionary significance of how the brain works as a result of the systems that it was built on over time. And I related so much to that, and it got me fascinated with this notion that maybe I could pick a special interest. If I could make a special interest out of psychology and cognitive neuroscience, and would it change anything with people? You know, would understanding the way that the brain works help me understand other people? And it became a gigantic passion of mine. And I've been doing behavioral psychology now for like over 2 decades. So it's been that process, and it's been fraught with failure. You know, there's an imperative, I feel, to constructively use your failures to succeed. And we're in a society that tries to sell us everything under the moon based on a fear of failure. So we place this giant social judgment on failure, even though there's no person out there that acquired a skill without failing to acquire it. It's very paradoxical to me, but I think it's significant just because living with a disability teaches you how to overcome challenge. You have to. You don't want to, you don't try to schedule it, you have to. It's like going to another country and having to learn the language. You know, it's a necessity. And so I find that people who have overcome challenge have a lot of differences in their traits, and from the different things that they tried first and failed, they've grown a lot. And that's definitely happened for me.
So when you said you haven't spoken for 25 years, what
I didn't
was
say that.
It?
I said I was 75% nonverbal at age 11, okay, and that I got my first friend at 25.
Okay. So how did you overcome that challenge of not being verbal? What was it that actually got you started to being verbal?
When I realized that I could write everything out ahead of time,
mm-hmm,
and look at it and practice, that was the first step. It was getting a sense of what it was going to look like when I was good at it. And I had to take hundreds of pictures of my face, trying to figure out what facial expressions are supposed to look like. Because, and you don't think about this, when you can't give people eye contact when they're talking, if that's overwhelming to you, you never really learn how to reciprocate facial expressions or recognize them. And, you know, and that happens to me all the time. You know, that's a constant challenge, because I have to emulate eye contact to try and give people the social attention that they deserve, because they're looking for signals. And that's one element of communication. I think there's a difference between communication and masking, right? Mm-hmm. If masking is pretending I'm neurotypical when I'm not, but communication is about the person that you're communicating to. What do you need to do so that they're able to understand you? And you have to modify your strategy accordingly. That's not masking, that's meeting someone at the communication table. And I had to take some time to figure out what belongs to those two different groups. As far as answering your question in the modern sense, I encode an entire paragraph that I'm going to say textually in my field of vision. I'll look to like a blank space or something like that. And then I have my own little punctuation and notation that I put on it that tells me when to do different facial expressions, different gesticulations with my hands. And then I basically write out that script, and then I follow it like a program.
Okay. So we're going to go on to a break, and we'll come back soon. Thank you.
Misalignment within your sales team or with the client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC. as we explore healing, self-discovery, and a space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Beneath the Calm. Thank you for joining us. Today we are talking about the different challenges that we go through with autism, or how to overcome that. Seraphim is Anshar. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Anshar. Sounds like OnStar, but with an H in it.
Anshar is sharing us his story of his journey dealing with autism. So Anshar, I was just listening to what you were saying about, having been able to share the facial expression or understanding. I have to say that just recently I was in a workshop, and the topic was about active listening. And as you mentioned, that people expect that certain expression from your face so that they understand that you're listening to them. Even though I don't have autism, I am an empath, and even my way of receiving things or hearing things is different than most. So it was quite interesting because, it is understood that if you looking person directly to the eye and they think that you're actually paying attention. But for me, when I pay attention, it's actually I close my eyes so that I'm really listening to what they're saying. So again, like you said, they can probably misunderstand you and think that, oh, you're not interested. Mm-hmm. Right? So it was quite interesting that you mentioned that, because I actually never thought about that, but I know that I just wanted to be able to really understand what a person is saying. So I often did that. It never occurred to me that the other person might be thinking differently. But what I have done, though, is when I am talking to people and I notice that I have my eyes closed or my head down, so I don't have any other distraction. So I always would tell them from the beginning that don't mind me, I'm really paying attention and I just have my eyes closed so I can really hear you. So it's quite interesting that, there's a common perception of facial expression that people are expecting, but yet, we have a different way of communicating.
Well, even two neurotypical people don't experience emotions the same way. That's part mm-hmm. of the research of Lisa Feldman Barrett, is this idea that the experience of emotions in the body is mm-hmm. wholly different for everyone. Mm-hmm. with autism, you have all those, you have a lot of a tendency toward more connectivity in the white matter tracts of the brain, corpus callosum, really all of the highways of the brain that mm-hmm. allow interconnectivity. And that can be hard because it means that, for example, with synesthesia, when someone's talking, you feel it on your skin. One of the things that I teach in communication, and it was from some of my early failures with masking, is to positively share your challenges, positively mm-hmm. share how you're different. Don't apologize. Mm-hmm. apologizing creates the wrong framework. But, I'm so excited. I want to share with you, just to let you know, I've got autism. I've got sensory processing disorder. I'm a really deep thinker. And sometimes, because I'm thinking so deeply and connecting it to so many things, I might speak too much, you know, and if that happens, or I'm getting off on a tangent, or I'm info dumping, then just hold up a finger. So, you know, that way I don't have to wait until after it happens to recognize it. And I would really appreciate that. Is there anything about the way that you communicate that I should know? And it gives you an opportunity to create a bridge with someone else. Because even if you don't have a developmental disability, some people are really bad with connecting stories. Some people are bad with metaphors. Some people are really fact-based people, and they need to be able to have a framework to file what you're about to tell them. And if you don't get to the point until the very end, it can be very dysregulating and frustrating. And that's if you don't have a developmental disability. So I think there are some positive lessons to learn there about communication. When it comes to active listening, though, in particular, there was this whole phenomenon of active listening in the 90s. And it was a lot of nodding and regurgitating what the other person is saying. I think that the goal of good listening is to transmit to the other person that you understand how they got there, how they drew the conclusions that they did. Yeah, you might have different data, you might have different experiences, but that you can follow their reasoning and their experience, and that you should be able to explain what they're saying and have them agree with you. And that's the point with listening. So however you choose to achieve that goal can look different for different people. And even if it was a certain way for you, communication is about connecting to another person. So you got to find a way that works with working with them.
So I think that sometimes people have the perception that if I'm listening to you, I cannot be able to hear what someone else is saying. Okay, that's a perception. But I personally know that, let's say I'm having a communication with you, but somebody just wanted to quickly say something to me, right? I'm still able to hear, even though I may not stop the communication I'm having with you, I still hear everything they say, right? So the only thing is I cannot respond to them right away, but I will always get back to them and say, you know what? I did hear you. I know. I will repeat what I heard from them. So I don't know whether that's common.
It's called bias, right? So it's a bias. So what happens is the common human mistake, is to look at the behaviors and actions and words of other people and to assume that their intention or the way that their brain works is the way that yours would be if you were doing the same thing. If you're the kind of person who would only set something down to talk to someone else if you were being rude, then if you see someone else do that, you will have the impression that they're being rude because you look at their behavior and then you try to process it through your own experience. And that's a fundamental mistake in all communication, to look at the behaviors and words of others and to assume their motives based on what you would be doing if you did that behavior. And that's something, it's a trap. It's a total trap.
So would you say, since you are also hypersensitive, would you be able to do the same as I do? Like, I may be having communication with you, but meanwhile, somebody's trying to talk to me, yet I was able to get the full gist of everything they tell me.
So you have two different kinds of processing. You have cognitive processing and you have somatic processing. Cognitive processing is active, right? It's what you're thinking. Whereas somatic processing, you're actually doing a kind of pattern recognition with your body. Your brain sees the patterns and then it generates a feeling. Some people call this energy, some people call it whatever. But if you're highly attuned to that, if your brain recognizes patterns, then if a person comes up to you to interrupt, based on their body language, their facial expression, the energy that you're feeling from them, you're already going to have a very good idea of what they're going to say. And so for you, you're primed so that when that person says one sentence to you, it's actually a paragraph. To another person, that might be a complete disruption. So again, it's really about finding the way that the person that you're interacting with, how they process things, And if you're communicating with someone who really needs, you know, that kind of attention from you, you know, some people have trauma. You know, if a person was raised by maybe an anxious, avoidant relationship with a parent, maybe when they were told just a second, or hey, just, you know, a quick interruption, what it really meant was something else, and then they're putting that pattern on you. There's a lot of different ways to broaden your understanding when it comes to other people, and knowing how your behavior is going to be taken by them. So the truth of it is that while we all should be accounting for our own bias, not everyone does. And there are people in your life who can affect the outcome of your life, whether you want to have close social relationships with them or not, that are going to use logical fallacy and bias in looking at you. And being aware of those common missteps with those people who aren't putting in that work, that's a challenge. And, you know, it is a challenge that we all have to navigate. How do you deal with people who haven't learned certain life lessons that you have? And whether or not you can do that with kindness and be firm with, you know, boundaries and all of that, that's part of what good personal management and social relationship management is all about.
So what I do is I do actually, when I'm meeting with new people and, you know, it's going to be, how do you call it, a continuous interaction, I do give them a little heads up of how I operate, you know, with the way I communicate or my abilities and things like that, so they have a better understanding when they're dealing with, you know, in certain situation. So now, would you, like, I think you mentioned that when you're communicating with somebody, you let them know as well, right?
Right away. And I used to wait, and that was a mistake. You know, if you wait however long in order to be able to tell someone, you know, what you need and who you are, then the only thing that you're really doing is luring them into a sense of false security. You know, if you waited 6 months, for example, to tell someone what you really needed in a relationship, you're only sparing yourself. You're not doing that for their benefit. You know, waiting until you quote unquote trust someone enough. The only thing that really does is not take advantage of that initial positive energy that you have when you're first interacting with someone. And instead, it's putting them in a position to make mistakes and to also feel like they're destabilized. You know, I thought everything was going great, and now all of a sudden here are all these new expectations. So learning to get over that fear of talking about what you actually need is a really, really important part of personal development, just right alongside of setting boundaries.
And also, I guess, basically sharing on how you communicate as well, so they have an understanding.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Not to take, not to make an assumption of how you communicate. That takes away the misunderstanding.
Yeah, I mean, as an autistic lexical first person, for example, when I send a message to someone and then they don't message me back, I find that socially painful. The amount of delay, it's called chronemic delay, that it takes for them to get back to me, to me, I would only be doing that if I didn't care about someone. So I have to step away from what my framework is and recognize that someone else is not the same as me and that I can't take their behavior to signal the things that it would mean for me.
Okay, we're going to go into break and come back. Thank you.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Larice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Beneath the Calm. Thank you all for joining us and being with us today. As I mentioned earlier on when we first came on, that in life we face so many different challenges. It doesn't matter. It could be challenges with work, challenges with life, challenges with health struggles. And everyone goes through different life challenges, and this space was created so we can share stories, share insights and tools to help each other to navigate through different challenges. And hopefully that this space can give you some insights and tools for you to deal with yours that you can relate to. When we overcome the challenges that we are faced with, we become stronger and better able to navigate through life much easier. Today we are sharing stories on the challenges with autism, and Anshar here is sharing his story. I have to say that when I first met him, I had no idea that he actually had autism until he told me. But what I found in him, he's so intelligent, and the way he articulate about different life matters. This is what this space is about, a conversation about life matters. And I just feel so happy that he was so willing to come and share his story about the challenges that he went through dealing with his neurodivergent? Is that the
right? Being neurodivergent just means, you know, being different.
Yeah. So I'm really, really impressed by your life story, because it just shows that, you know, in spite of the challenges you've dealt with, and you're doing so great, and you're doing so much for so many people. And I'm so grateful that you are here today to share your story. And I'm sure your story will inspire so many people, not only people that has family or friends that has someone with the same challenges as you've gone through. But what I would really love for you to share here today with our listeners, hopefully those who are listening, either themselves that is facing the same challenges, or they know someone in their family so they can help them. Could you please share those insights and tools of how they can navigate through life dealing with that, please?
Well, if you're looking to support non-speaking people, there are really great organizations out there. One of them is called TEVA, T-E-V-A, V as in Victor. And they're building a non-speaking community, giving people equal access to work. You know, if you're looking to reach out to me specifically, I am the only Anshar Serafim on LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find. I can give you my electronic business card link. I'm the creator of Ask Anshar, which is it's a custom GPT that serves as like a social decoder for people who are on the spectrum, so that they can be able to try to muddle through confusing social situations and understand things. Nothing clinical there, just being able to decipher things. Now, there are all kinds of different therapies and support groups. I think something that's really important if you have a child in your life is to make sure that you're getting good mental health support and that you're getting community support, because it does take energy and frustration and challenge. And you're going to be teaching that child how to overcome those challenges and making sure that you're not directing that frustration that's going to come along with those responsibilities, a perfectly valid feeling to have, and making sure that you're directing that energy appropriately. That's a fantastic reason to have access to a mental health professional. I've been studying behavioral psychology for 20 years, but I'm not a clinician. The role of a behaviorist is to understand response, understand why the brain works the way that it does and that it gives the output that it does. And so as a result, I'm not very qualified to give any kind of clinical advice, but I know that a proper form of mental health support is crucial, just because anytime you're going through anything that's going to be a long-term challenge, there are right ways and wrong ways to do that. One of the challenges for people who are on the spectrum is employment. Up to 85% of autistic adults are unemployed. And it is partially because of issues like transportation, making sure that you have access to transportation if you're not able to drive. Like for me, I didn't get my license till I was almost 40. But also, because your symptoms can be seen as character traits, there are a lot of processes that seem very normal in the job interview process, like an interview, where if you don't know about a person's challenges, you're immediately going to assign a bunch of negative qualifications to that person that don't have anything to do with them as a person. You're literally going to push them out of an opportunity for a job that they would be good at based on social symptoms that present as character traits. And there's a paradox there because employers aren't really able to ask a lot about your medical conditions. So it's incredibly important for people who have challenges to self-advocate and to be able to work on their communication skills so that those things can be positively framed, in order to not deny themselves, the situations that they can use in order to prosper. There's so many different aspects, but I think one of the things when you have a condition where you only have, maybe one out of 44 people who has a condition, is you have to find community. You have to find people that are like yourself that you can relate and share experiences with so that you don't feel like an island. And there's a lot of great groups out there for that. And I encourage the people who are affected on the spectrum, just as I am, to seek out those resources. And if you ever want to write me, I'm happy to direct you.
Thank you so much, Anshar. It's been very enlightening, and I'm so grateful for your insights and your sharing your story, because I am sure it will help many people that don't have as much information on autism. Like I said, I don't know too much. I've seen some. I'm learning more, and I've learned a lot from you in the very short time that we have communication, and I really find it very inspiring just listening to you to talk. So thank you so much again for being here. And I hope that anybody that needs any information related to autism or how to overcome the challenges, please reach out to Anshar. And he's just amazing. And I'm sure you will learn a lot from him. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
On Frank About Health, we're not.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC, Uplift.